The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. I'm David Zeidel and this is the AutJet Business Show. And we have the absolute pleasure tonight to have Greg Solomon with us. And Greg is the former CEO of McDonald's South Africa and a current CEO business coach. Greg has spent nearly 30 years under the Golden Arches. He started off in a career of civil engineering, building roads and bridges, but then became the CEO of McDonald's South Africa. During his 15 years tenure as CEO, he led the brand through a massive scale and growing the business from 50 stores to over 400 restaurants and managing a workforce of over 15,000 people. He is perhaps most respected for his people-first leadership style, having steered the organization through some of South Africa's most difficult periods. And those periods included COVID-19 and also the 2021 riots. But he isn't just the burger guy. Today, he has transitioned into a new chapter as a world-class CEO coach, and he coaches CEOs around the world and in South Africa. And he helps the entrepreneurial business navigate the complex stages of both growing and scaling their businesses. Greg is a former head boy and rugby captain of King David Victory Park. He is a man who believes that while technology and strategy are vital, being a mensch, a good person who does good things and focusing on culture is what creates that truly competitive advantage. So hopefully Greg is going to share with us some of those principles and give us some business advice. And he's going to discuss his life pyramid philosophy. And hopefully we can learn from Greg what he does and maybe emulate that in what we do. Greg, welcome to the show.
Good evening, David, and to High FM, and thank you very much for hosting me. It's a great privilege.
Thank you. So, Greg, just before we get to interview you, I always do a little business story.
Good.
And I'm going to start the business story, and it's from my book, Life on the Run, where we talk about the different lessons that I learned through running and life in general, and there are 18 lessons of that. That's why it's Life on the Run, which comes from Chai.
Beautiful.
And we're on to chapter 13, and lesson chapter 13 talks about helping others actually helps you. And Zig Ziglar said, you will get all you want in life if you help enough people get everything that they want. Hmm. And for me, this lesson was learned during running where I'd come back from a little bit of an injury. I wasn't running that well, and I was running a marathon, and I was running next to somebody, and we helped each other through, or I thought that he was helping me through. And at the end of the race, I said, well, I've just come back from an injury. Thanks for helping me through. And he looked at me in this absolute astonishment, and he said, no, you were helping me through. And in life, when you give, you get. And I think it's a challenge when people, if anybody can take something, and if you're struggling with something yourself, rather than focus on yourself, you focus on the other person, somehow we get back more from that. And I look at it and I think it's like looking into a mirror, and what we give always reflects back to us.
I think that's so powerful. I mean, over the years, I've studied leadership styles. You've got to dictating leadership style, you've got a consulting leadership style, you've got a persuasive leadership style. And not to be too cliched on this, I mean, we can study huge leaders in the world, Winston Churchill, Margaret Thatcher, and some of the latest leaders that we lead in the world. I won't mention all of them, but Madiba, not to be too cliched, I believe sits with a leadership style called influential leadership style. It's something that I've strived all my life to become more an influential leader. Don't know if, even with the many, many years, don't know if I get there straight away. But I have a little mathematical formula. Being an ex-engineer, I always want to put maths to it. And I won't do it for your audience because it's too much. But influential leadership in my mathematical formula is trust multiplied by respect. And when I do this with young students, I actually give them some numbers to be able to rate a particular person. But the moral here, and on the back of your story that I've just heard today, is to be an influential leader, to deliver on trust, or to be a trustworthy leader, you just need to deliver on your promise. So make small promises and deliver them versus these huge promises. And then the formula for respect is teaching somebody something new today. So if I could wake up every single day and teach somebody, very similar to your running story, something new, and I could deliver on my promise, all right, that's the magical simple formula. We can go into detail of becoming an influential leader. Deliver on your promise and teach somebody something new today. I still strive to become that influential leader every single day.
That is incredible. You know, there's a Dutch saying that says something like, "Trust walks in the room, but it leaves on horseback."
Yeah.
In other words, it takes a lot of time to build that trust, but you can lose it very quickly.
And I think the secret there is, I mean, we all try to do this. We're all under time restraints, but it's the little things. It's really the little things. It's not these big things that we run. It's the small things. It's the thank you. It's the hello. It's I'll be there on time. You know, it's I'll be there at 10 o'clock and you get there at 10 o'clock. And that becomes very, very important for you as a leader. And your people see that. And it's more in your actions than your speech, more often than none.
So I think what you've just shared with us is an amazing lesson. So you've achieved your goal for today already by influencing others. But let's go back a little bit, and let's go back to where you obviously got this life philosophy, which you're following. And I want to know, where did that come from? So if I go back to your early days, and I mentioned earlier you were head boy of King David, and then you were the captain of the rugby team. Do you think your leadership was built there? Did those experiences help you become the leader that you were later on? So really the question I'm asking is, did that build the leadership, or were you already a leader and so you took the leadership position and it just continued?
I think everybody's a leader, and there's different leadership levels. The first is to lead yourself. The second is to lead others. The third is to lead managers. The fourth is to lead organizations. I'm talking in a business term. And in our communities, we do the same thing as well. So everybody's a leader and everybody leads self. And I believe leadership can be taught. You know, you have people that feels like this was like a born leader. There is an element of that. But I think leadership can be taught, number one. But I think the more important thing is the want. You've got to put up your hand. And there's not a lot of this. And maybe for my... I don't want to say like for my harm or for my regrets in life. I've always been the sort of person that put up his hand and said, when somebody said, who wants to take on this role? And think about presidents of countries and presidents of worlds and presidents of committees. You've got to be nominated and you've got to accept that nomination. You've got to take it's an accountability and it's a responsibility. So I think that is ingrained in me. When somebody used to, at a very young age, if somebody said, who wants to carry this particular thing, I'd always put up my hand to do that. It wasn't a schlupping thing or whatever, but it was always more a giving thing that I felt that I would give. And I still find it quite embarrassing that when you sit in an audience and there's a volunteer for a committee member or a this member or a that member, you know, I'm the person that says, okay, somebody needs to do it. And maybe that is natural leadership, you know, to take a responsibility to be good. And make good. So maybe that's natural, but you've got to work on your leadership. I mean, I've never been a person that could speak very well. I've learned to speak well because I've had to do that in public forums. But I truly believe from where I was as a youngster to where I am today, absolutely leadership can be taught, but you need to want to do it. And so that's a big one for me. I think ingrained in who I've always wanted to impact people's lives more than impact my own life. I've always, you know, befriended people that were very different to me. You know, my mates and my friends and our families are very different to who I am. And I think that multicultural things we can learn from different people in our lives. So I can help them in their weaknesses, and they can help me in my weaknesses. And that's what makes us strong. And I don't think I want to ever be a great. I also just want to be just good, just a good enough guy, you know what I'm saying? And just a good guy who does good things, a good husband, a good father, a good friend. That was like just being a good guy was my number one thing, being good, doing good.
Do you think that it's just being good enough is what allowed you to put your hand up? Because I think a lot of people don't want to put their hands up because they think, I'm scared I'm not going to be able to do it fantastically well, and maybe somebody else can do it better.
I've come a long way to say, well, I'll put my hand up, and everybody thinks, well, you want to do good to win a medal, to get some brownie points, so people can say, oh, Greg's a good guy. No, that's the wrong attitude. You want to put your hand up and do something to learn for yourself. It's a learning journey. Everything's a learning journey. You put your hand up, you get exposure. You put your hand up, you get education. You put your hand up, you get experience. And you mentioned something in the introduction. I don't know if you were going in there, but one of my leadership philosophies in life comes from the Egyptian pyramids. I had a great opportunity. It's still on my wife and I's bucket list to go there and have a look at the pyramids again. But I had an opportunity to visit the pyramids. And again, once again, being a little bit nerdy and engineering to you, is why are the pyramids always triangles? And why are the pyramids always the same angle? So it was weird. I mean, those were like architects and engineers of the past. But actually, the angle of a pyramid is probably, they're roughly the same. As if you throw some sand on the ground, it takes a natural angle. Actually, in engineering, it's called the angle of repose. It's always the same angle, around 40 to 50 degrees of that angle. But I won't go there too much with you. I'm getting too nerdy here. But I think the important thing for me in leadership is the bigger your base, the higher your pyramid. That was the only way you can get a monster pyramid. You had to build a wider base because the angle's the same. You know, in those days, you weren't building a skyscraper. And so I think everybody's base is built on three things that I've just sort of mentioned.
Right.
Education. Keep on going. For those that are at school, keep on going. And now you're going to go to university. And then once you come out of university, then that's the start of your life. You keep on educating yourself in everything you do. The next one is exposure. And the next one is experience. The three E's of building a base of the pyramid. And so to bring it back together or putting up your hand, it's not about getting brownie points. It's about building my experience and my exposure. And I think that's contributed to who I am today.
Wow, that's amazing insight. But and I want to now just go back a little bit to your McDonald years and to find out how did you use these three E's in developing McDonald's, but we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel. And if you're wondering who we're talking to, it's Greg Solomon. He's the former CEO of McDonald's South Africa and the current CEO and business coach. And I think just in the introduction, we've got some unbelievable coaching. And the coaching is around everybody is a leader, but it's about those that put their hands up and take that leadership. And Greg was sharing us that the difference really is just about wanting to do that. And just before the break, you ended off with the concept of the bigger your base, the taller the pyramid is. And part of building that base, you shared with us the three E's. Maybe I can say it makes it easy to have the three E's. You said it was education, it's exposure, and it's experience. Mm. So if we take this and we mold it into your the McDonald's years, if I can call it that. Could you tell us, and let's create the burger,
yes,
of what was the base, the bottom bun, what was the meat inside, and then what did you learn from leading that at the top? So just take us a little bit around that whole experience for people who want to know what's it like to lead McDonald's and to grow it from 50 restaurants to over 500 restaurants. So share with us.
So educationally, I'm a trained civil engineer. Civil engineer, for those that don't know, we build buildings, we build roads, we build stormwater drains and things like that. And I was newly married. I've been married for 35 years to my beautiful Lisa. She was Levine, now she's Solomon. And I was on this road in Villiers on the way to Vereeniging. And this was like 32 years ago. And in those days, we responded to job applications via the newspaper. Remember, the back of the newspaper, looking for whatever. And it was tough because I was building a road, and Lisa phoned me. She said, "Hey, listen, McDonald's is looking for an engineer." I said, "But they're hamburger guys. I mean, what am I going to?" "No, but they're looking for an engineer to build their buildings." And I said, "Okay, fine." And I was staying away from home as a young guy, building this road, you can imagine. And she's like, my husband's away, blah, blah. Anyway, got home, put an application in, applied as a project manager, got a job, and started building McDonald's restaurants 35 years ago. So personally, I've built about 70 McDonald's restaurants, and I'm fast-forwarding because our hour's going to go like this. Yeah. And after about 5-6 years, the then CEO, Carter Drew, came to me and said, we think we see some talent here in you. Would you ever come into operations? Would you ever come into making food?" And I said, "Man, making food? I didn't study 4 or 5 years as an engineer to make food. I'm a builder. I build these things." And I declined the offer. And he said, "Okay, fine." I got back home, and the bala boss, my Lisa, said to me what had happened, and I told her. She said, "Are we sure? This is like, if you're going to become a leader, are you putting up your hand? Are you ever going to lead this business as an engineer? This is an operational business." Anyway, 2 weeks later, I went back to Daryl Webb. It was the second CEO. Carter Drew was the first CEO, an American guy. Daryl Webb was the second CEO. Darren Hall was the third CEO, all American guys. And I was the fourth CEO, the first South African guy. And I went back into his office and I said, "I've thought about this 3 weeks later.
Right.
I'll take that operations job." Now, I had to go and work in the restaurants for a year. That was a condition. And he said to me, "The job's no longer
available.
You snooze, you lose." Wow, I was devastated. Eh? Young guy, devastated. I built a number of restaurants, and I'm thinking, "What have I done? I've done a big, big error."
It's interesting that there was something that you said no to. Now you wanted it, and now you're devastated that you can't get what you said no to originally.
Exactly. So, I mean, you're a young guy, you're impulsive, you're making decisions, you know what I'm saying? And it's a story, there's lots of stories here, and I'll come back to youth, because McDonald's, the average age of a McDonald's employee is 27, 28 years old. So we talk about young people and the balance between patience and persistence as we build this layer of whatever. So anyway, he made me sit on Spielkes for probably a month or two, and then he called me into his office. He said, "You want to revisit that conversation?" I said, "Yes, I'll revisit." It's a leadership lesson of putting up your hand. And I the rest was history. Put me into Auckland Park McDonald's, and I cooked in the restaurant for 1 year.
Wow.
I'm not quite sure.
Did you think at the time, like, am I cooked? Like, have I made a mistake?
I thought I was the most – I didn't know what I was doing. You know, you're cooking French fries and hamburgers. You're serving customers. But at the end of the day, you've got to understand a business to run the business. You've got to understand how to make a million small moves and make 1 rand profit for a million small moves. You're not going to find one big move that's going to make a million rand. So it's a lot of small moves, and trying to understand how to make money is crucial in the business that you're in. And so I did that, went into operations, went into supply chain, went into marketing. We're talking about my exposure and my experience now. You trained as an engineer. I did that for only five years. By 32, I was out of engineering already. I was into operations, learned supply chain. And so this exposure and this education, those three words, I've built that on the base of my life journey. And my life journey has been like the university of life. And I'd come back to the young people that are listening to this as well, and I'm saying, look, obviously doctors and professional architects and maybe, you know, chiropractors and maybe lawyers, slightly different because, you know, you practice your – but generally finance and business – young people, I find, by the time they hit 35, they're not practicing what they learned at university. They're broadened, and that's okay. It's okay. University gives us the license to come into the world and practice those things. The university gives us the license and the ability to sit on our bums and learn and swat, because guess what, guys? It's not the end. It's just the beginning. So every single day, you're going to sit and swat.
Is that education that you're talking about, is that the equivalent of that broad base to the pyramid that you're talking about?
Well, exactly. I mean, for me to have become CEO of a large food business that understands marketing, that understands real estate, that understands human capital, there was no ways I was going to do that as an engineer. There was no ways. I was too focused. I was like linear, like a vertical versus horizontal. And so the engineering, I wouldn't have been able to start this journey if I wouldn't have had the engineering background. And engineering was great for me because it's taught me project management, a start, an end, a budget, a quality, a human capital resource that you need to get something done. And it's a beautiful baseline profession. But anyway, cut it long story short, and that was my first sort of 15 years, and then my last 15 years was CEO of McDonald's. So privileged to be the first South African guy to take the helm. I think I took it over when we were about 50 to 70 odd restaurants, and I left about a year ago. So it's been a fantastic journey, and it has taught me about the pyramids, and it has taught me about the three E's. And that's how I've sort of built my hamburger, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people, when you talk about McDonald's, the first thing that everybody says, and it maybe it's from a book out there or something that's been repeated again, people say, McDonald's don't make money from the burgers, they make money from real estate. Mm. How true is that statement?
I would say it's not true. Look, McDonald's owns a lot of real estate. And if you look at the income statement, one of the biggest costs over 20 years is the escalating rents that one would pay. But if you talk to the purest real estate professional, you know, making high single digit yields on real estate is not something a real estate person would do. But McDonald's does it because it secures the longevity of a decision that it makes. It makes such a strategic decision of corner Main Street and Main Street. Mm. It wants to take a 20-year view of something. And when you're taking a 10 or 20-year view on something, you might as well own the land. You know, if you're taking a 5-year view. And so once again, that's also taught me something on leadership and like how long are we looking out? Are we seeing 1 year? Are we seeing 3 years? Are we seeing 5 years? Can we even see 10 years? And I know it's harder now. I mean, 30 years ago, we were running 5-year plans, 3-year plans, 1-year plans. And now with AI, things change within 3 months, 6 months. So we have to be nimble, but you have to have a direction. Mm-hmm. In the coaching work that I do with some of my clients, I know we'll go there now. The first thing I do with anyone is I do something called the crystal ball. Okay, maybe it's an inappropriate thing to be able to say, but let's talk about a vision. Where do we want to be in 3 years' time? Hmm. Like if we could be celebrating something and we're sitting somewhere and celebrating, let's take ourselves to 2030 and say, this is a success. Because once we know what that looks like, all right, it must be big. Hmm. Big dreams, small steps.
So it's to have that greater vision. And I want to get to the coaching in a second.
Okay.
But I just want to just continue a little bit with the McDonald's.
No worries.
So if you have a look at the McDonald's story and your story and okay. intermesh it.
Well, let me answer your question first. It's not a real estate business.
Right.
All right.
Yes.
I would say to you that real estate is a fundamental strategic pillar for us, and it secures the longevity of our well-being in a particular issue. But I would probably say we're more of food and people's business than ever before. And I think whilst I haven't been there for the last year, this business is becoming, and it should be like all other businesses, it's becoming a tech, AI, and information business. Because when you're serving 100 million customers every single year, you know a lot about a lot of people.
Right.
And these days, that's a cool thing to have.
And also, I mean, if I order a burger, do you really know me or do you not? And do you make an effort with that? Which leads us into the next question. But just before I get there, some people might have just tuned in and they're thinking, wow, this is an amazing story. Who are we listening to? You're busy listening to Greg Solomon, former CEO of McDonald's South Africa and now a coach to CEOs. Greg, so just if you can intermesh your own story and the McDonald's story, what is it that McDonald's does that really made them successful? And what is it that you did within that that made McDonald's South Africa successful?
I think McDonald's takes making food and hamburgers more seriously than anyone else. That's the bottom line. We would measure the distance between one piece of equipment to another piece of equipment, and it needed to be 1.2 meters, not 1.3, not 1.4. We would cook certain items to 3 minutes, 05 seconds, and to 188 degrees, and to 211 degrees. We would measure everything scientifically. And it's not to try to say, oh, it's not scientific, and you want the chef's personal favor and a little bit. When we say to you it's got 3 grams of salt, it's got 3 grams of salt, not 4 grams of salt. Mm. And so we've taken this business so seriously that we can measure every second, or I'm not there anymore, but they can measure every second. They can measure every gram. They can tell you every single cost to the maniacal detail. They can get their waste down to less than 1%. And so when you take a business that seriously and then you get a level of consistency, you get a level of trust. And when you get a level of trust, you get a level of brand loyalty. And I think that's like really, really the essence of it. And then probably the second thing that I would say.
I want to really get there, but I just want to, what you've just said is so crucial. There was a book I was reading recently called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And in there, he talks about the consistency that you're talking about. You don't want to one day go to a company and have an unbelievable experience, and then you go back the next day and it's shocking.
Yeah.
You, whatever it is, you know what you're getting. And that's what I'm hearing from you talk about McDonald's, that it's complete consistency and you learn it in one place. And I believe there is the McDonald's University, the Hamburger University. And then you just replicate that and make sure that that works everywhere. Is that correct?
It's one of the prouder moments for me when I was there at McDonald's is the 9th Hamburger University in the world sits in Sandton, Johannesburg.
Oh, wow.
I think they train over 3,000 students by now, every single. And so this consistency is about humans. It's about people. And if you want to do it with people, then it's about culture. And so we got to go into there. But the truth be told these days, it's about a combination of great culture, great training and great technology, because when you've got 15,000 people, you can't be relying on the top 10 chefs in your business. You now need to be able to get it out there. So that culture and that willingness to learn, training is absolutely one of those things in McDonald's. I mean, a young person can join McDonald's with a matric, come into its system through its training, through its hamburger universities, and become a manager. I'll tell you two quick stories, maybe one. I'll limit it to one. He's still there. Take a guy like Colin Messina. Started off McDonald's 32 years ago as a sweeper, sweeping the floor, probably earning R7 an hour. The guy runs like 34, 35, 36 restaurants right now. You know what I'm saying? So there are different worlds to be able to come senior management now. But that's a hard journey. I'm not quite sure many people will want to take a long journey like 20 years to get to places. And that comes down to what I'm seeing now is, and especially with young people that I coach, is this thing what I call the balance between your patience and your persistence. I think there's a lot more persistence these days and a lot less patience. And what grows the three E's is more patience than persistence.
Wow. And then you were going to go into some of the other lessons?
Through the McDonald's environment. So I'm basically saying to you, if you want trust, you need consistency. If you want consistency, you need great people. Great people on the back of this is all about training. And it comes back to the stories we spoke about influential leadership. If we can continue to teach people something new every single day. And so those organizations out there that are training and teaching organizations, yes, you're going to lose talent. You're going to lose because people come to McDonald's to learn how to become great managers and then 10-15% of them leave every year to go and do their own things. And many people have phoned me and said, you know, it was my first job at McDonald's and now I run my own business. And I think that's the best thing ever. But when you've got a training system that can get people to levels of productivity within 90 days, within 120 days, you're okay with having people leave your organization. One of the best stories I heard was from a chief people officer about 5-6 years ago. I think his name was Rich. I forget his surname. I think it's Rich Flourish. Forgive me, Rich, if I've said your surname. He's not a South African guy. We were talking about, I mean, can you imagine, McDonald's South Africa employs 15,000 people. I think there's between 1.3 and nearly 2 million employees around the world. If those employees aren't your best brand ambassadors, when they leave you, if they start at 25 and they leave you at 30, they get married and they have kids, if those guys haven't had a great employment experience, they're not going to be customers of yours in the future. If you know that your employees one day are going to be customers of yours in the future, you better make sure that that employment experience is the most powerful one. So really, to underline this question that you asked me a few minutes ago, is McDonald's a hamburger business? Perhaps not. A real estate business? Perhaps not. Is McDonald's a hamburger business? Definitely yes, but perhaps not. Is McDonald's an operationally effective business? Perhaps not, but definitely at the core of it. Well, perhaps yes to everything, but 100% sure, McDonald's is a people business, a culture business, a training business, a learning business.
Wow, that's a huge lesson. I know that Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, has a saying that he says, we're not in the coffee business serving people. We're in the people business. We just happen to be serving coffee. And it sounds like it's the same kind of lesson, but maybe yours is even deeper, that the lesson is, we're actually, are you in the hamburger business? Yes. But you're in the training business of training people how to be great at what they do and running a business.
Absolutely. And that's a big investment. So people don't train because it's a big investment, and people don't train because people learn those skills from you and they leave you. And that's okay. Don't worry if they leave, because if they've had a great employment experience, they're going to be customers of yours, and that's going to be the longevity, of your business. So I think that's crucial. And some of the lessons that we've already spoken to each other about, you can see, aren't lessons that I've applied. These are lessons that I've learned through my career that I'm now verbalizing because it's my exposure that's taught me these things.
And if you look at, often business is talking about return on investment.
Yeah.
And you investing in these people. What are some of the metrics or some of the ratios that you would look at in McDonald's to say, are we doing well or are we not doing well?
Again, I told you we measure everything. So we'll measure number of customers per employee. So if we got 100 customers coming through in 1 hour and you've got 10 employees effectively serving them, they're not as efficient as 100 customers coming in and 5 employees serving them. Well, how do you get 5 employees to serve 100 customers, not 10 employees to serve 100 customers? Well, guess what? The highly skilled guys are going to be more productive, and therefore, the more that you skill them up, the less that you actually need them on the floor. So everything's measured. You know, we call it guest counts per man hour. I'm no longer there. But at the end of the day, if you don't measure it, you can't get it. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind, you know, being involved in this in that business for 30 years, leading it for 15, that there's massive ROI, measurable ROI on upskilling it. Actually, to be quite honest, I've been quite vocal on leadership business forums that actually senior business in South Africa and the world have a responsibility, and we have a responsibility to continue educating, all right, our young workforce. That's our responsibility. That's building skills, building leaders, and building, you know, growth in our country.
And that's what we started off with, of getting kind of the more you give, the more you actually get.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're wondering who we're talking to, it's Greg Solomon, former CEO of McDonald's and the current CEO business coach. And what we're going to do now is moving more onto the CEO coaching side of it. but we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and having a fascinating story with Greg Solomon, the former CEO of McDonald's, and he was sharing about part of building a business is getting enough people to learn how to do it properly and run it. And then you can use it. You're investing in something, but your return on investment is that you need 5 people to serve 100 people rather than 10 to serve 100, and your returns are there immediately. Yeah. And Greg, I think, left McDonald's about a year ago and started coaching other CEOs using both the lessons that he learned and the lessons through McDonald's. And one of the things was, and it's for me, it's a theme that keeps going through what you're saying, is putting your hand up. Even the story of the guy who was the sweeper, who now runs a whole lot of stores, he eventually put his hand up and said, I can do this. When you dealing with CEOs, these are people who are already halfway or in their journey. How do you coach them? And you started off talking about the crystal ball, yeah, and visualizing what it should look like in the future so you can take it there. Do you have a system, or can you take us through some of the things and the approach you would take if you're dealing with a CEO and they come to you and say, I need some coaching?
So most of my businesses where I specialize in is scaling businesses. So again, that boring, nerdy engineer is probably not going to be the person that's going to invent the next beautiful dessert. You know, that's not my skill set. My skill set is one of building 2Xing, 3Xing, scaling businesses, going from 50 to 400. So I've been very focused on that. So I'm probably not going to coach that big CEO of a bank but I am going to coach that entrepreneur who needs to move their business into the next level, who needs to grow it to 2X, 3X, who's got some people issues. And so we start off with this term, I called it the crystal ball, called big dreams, small steps. And I like to go on a journey. It takes a little while for us to be able to do it. And I like to plan out, where do we want to be in the next 5 to 3 years? There's a lot of leaders that can't see beyond 6 months because we're talking about cash flow. We're talking about survival. And so we take that journey to get there. And then the journey's just too daunting. It's just too daunting to double this business. We can't even see how it goes. And then we bring it down into one-year steps, into quarterly steps, into monthly steps. And then you can see these are bite-sized pieces. These are bite-sized pieces and sequenced pieces to be able to get there. So we can take these big things, and often there's the cases that these dreams aren't big enough. And I really work with these leaders to think big, and to think big not only in scale, but to think big in change and innovation. Now, innovation is often not doing something new. Innovation is often doing the same thing differently.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's not innovation. I always think innovation is new, but you're saying it's...
We're living in a world of innovators, and we're living in a world of fast followers.
Right.
And the fast followers are building a lot of traction. We're going to spend a lot of time, a lot of resources innovating things, and then we can spend a shorter amount of time in copying them. So when you copy something and execute it better, in my opinion, you're a fast follower. We can see it in the car industries and all the cars that are driving on the road now versus where the cars, you know, were driving on the road just 5 years ago. It's completely different. And we can understand that the fast followers are gobbling up market share of where the innovators are. And so sometimes these big dreams is not just about tripling your turnover or increasing your bottom line. It's how we're thinking different as leaders. And are we innovating by thinking differently? And maybe do we have a problem? And then I talk a lot about going through different phases of businesses. There's leaders that start a business. I started a business. I generated this new item. It's cool. I was able to sell one. I was able to sell 3. I was able to sell 10. And now we take it into what I call phase 2 of a business life cycle, which is a scaling life cycle. And you need different leaders. Hmm. And so we work with those leaders to be able to say, are you the leader for phase 2 of this business innovation? And this is a hard conversation. Many founders and leaders, we identify the first thing is we want to reach this crystal ball or the Table Mountain, but you're not the one that's going to take us there. That's a very hard thing to say to a leader that's founded a business.
Mm.
But there's cool things and easy ways and pivots into chairman and different roles and whatever the story that we
so
have.
So you're still involved in the business,
of course.
But you're not
it's your business, especially if you're a shareholder in the business. You're not going to give it away.
Yeah.
These are hard things to do that. And then leadership is not just about one person. Leadership's about a leadership team. And if you have to compare it to, let's say, a rugby team, and I happen to play, number four in the rugby team, then I'm not going to be the best number nine guy. So I'm going to recruit a number nine and a number 10. But if I'm a fly half, I better recruit a number four or a flank. So we build leadership teams, all right, because it's how the leadership team hunts as a pack versus how not. I mean, we're busy with World Cup soccer now, and we're astonished to see big teams being knocked out because great teams are not about a few superstars. Great teams are about teams that can play together. Great teams are about probably 11 brilliant footballers than having four or five superstars.
Mm.
And that's what leadership and leadership team building is all about.
So I want to take you back to the comment you made about some of these leaders don't think big enough.
Mm.
What do you think is behind that? Is it that it becomes too daunting, or is it because they don't have vision, or is it because they're scared of thinking too big because they might not reach that goal?
Well, it's fear, isn't it? I mean, especially for the entrepreneurs, it's a fear to be able to get there. But dreaming, being a dreamer, is not a bad thing. We dream, you know, have big dreams. And by the way, failure is not bad either.
Mm.
So we got to try things, and we got to fail. I mean, these big successes that we read are inspirational. What we don't hear is the non-failures for every success that we read. That's what we don't hear. So unfortunately, the news doesn't cover those failures. You know, Greg, yeah, let's talk about all these failures that you've had in life. And I've had many failures in life. But so we want to dream big. And how do you eat a monster pizza? You eat it one bite at a time. So if you can have somebody take you out there into utopia, all right, it can't be that. But if we can break it down into small bite-sized pieces. And then there's a whole discipline in coaching of being disciplined. You need somebody to hold you disciplined to get through month one, quarter one, year one, because that's another thing we're not. We're not disciplined. We want to dream big, but we don't put the hard work to get there.
Would you say that CEOs or business owners are like that, that they're not disciplined? I would think that they are disciplined.
Well, I wouldn't know. Those successful ones are very disciplined. But at the end of the day, I'd say generally, yes, successful people are disciplined in that. And I would probably say those of us, including myself, that have failed a few times probably haven't had a big enough dream, haven't been maniacally focused on what they wanted to do, obsessed, absolutely obsessed, and probably not disciplined enough. We probably missed a few T's and dotted across R's. Listen, at the end of the day, there's nothing like hard work. Those that put the hard work and the hard miles in are going to be more successful than those that don't. Nothing comes easy. I mean, there's one. You'll always see the stories that come easy, and I hit the jackpot, and I invested in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin, you know, went 400% up. Okay, you're going to get those scenarios. But for the general, you know, Joe like myself, it's all about hard work.
Great. So I want to get to some of your life lessons or some of the things that you would say to a youngster today. You started off saying, you're an educator, you like sharing. So if we can hear some of those things that maybe youngsters today are listening to, and you've already covered a lot of it of around the discipline and the dreaming big, but do you have some of those other lessons that we can learn? But again, we'll do it just after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and I have the pleasure of talking to Greg Solomon, former CEO of McDonald's South Africa, and currently a CEO business coach. And Greg has shared with us quite a few things, and he says some of the things that are holding people back is, number one, not dreaming big enough. Number two, so by dreaming big enough, you know where the goal is. Then using your engineering background, breaking it down to all the steps that you have to do, but breaking it down to the absolute minimum steps that you need to do, and then be disciplined to actually do that? Besides that, or building on that, what are the life lessons that you would share with somebody either in the early stages of the business or struggling in their business or a youngster?
So I would say when the external environment or world is changing faster than your own internal reference, you become irrelevant. You become left behind.
Just say that again.
When the external world is changing faster than your own internal reference, whatever that may be.
Right.
You become left behind.
And that's what we're facing now with AI and...
It could be AI, it could be something else. So you need to be a student of the world from a young age. Read a lot, study a lot. Pick five things to understand. The one is down your channel of expertise. I'm a civil engineer, would want to read those things. But what else are you interested in? And always be a student of life. This is like absolutely crucial because we don't know where it's going to be in the next 5 years. And we need to understand opportunities out there. So we need to understand what's happening in the external world. With that said, don't be completely paralyzed because your own discipline and your own focus, all right, is going to be something that's a strength of yours. Remember, we spoke about discipline. We spoke about focus. We can speak about a lot of people doing a lot of things. At some point in time, you have to do that. But I'm saying being a student of the world, being well-read, understanding what are the local trends. And these days, it's very easy for you to be able to get there. So that's certainly something that I talk to my kids about. And certainly the young people that I coach as well, trying to be a little different. So that's number one. Possibly number two, surround yourself with people who add tremendous value to you and you can add tremendous value to them. Just think about this. If you had, and take me with a pinch of salt over here. I mean, if you had 100 important people in your life, you would give them 1% each of your time.
Mm.
That's like crazy. Obviously, you got your wife and you got your parents and you give more and more and more and more time. But how much time are you giving people? So I'm really focused on like the 25 to 50 people that are the most important people in my life. And I give those guys all my time. Well, I give my time to everybody. Don't get me wrong. But really, really focus on that. And I've never had one mentor. And now that I'm a coach of CEOs and boards and shareholders, So in some ways they look at me, but I say to them as well, I've never had one coach in my life that's really shaped me. I've had many, many coaches in my life. These are the people that I've surrounded myself around and coaches that I look up to, coaches that are my peers and people that have taught me, that are below me, that have taught me things. And who I am today is the mosaic of these little lessons of people that have inspired me in my life. So, you know, possibly another lesson is just make sure consciously, all right, there are people in your life, in your social life, in your religious life, in your business life, three or four people that you connect with and that you can talk to. So that would be really, really important for me. And then this one that I want to leave vague, especially for the youngsters, and we've spoken about it before, is the balance of your patience and your persistence. I mean, we've read that 10,000 hours makes an expert. I'm a big sports guy, so you look at these professional rugby teams and these football teams. These guys put a lot of work in there. You don't get there straight away. And to those young listeners out there, I want you to be persistent. I want you to dream big, but I also want you to understand that it's one step at a time to get there, and it's a lot of focus to be able to do that. So those are a couple of things that I could possibly leave you. There's many, many more, but I'll pass the mic back to you.
Great, excellent. So it reminds me of that old joke of what you're saying with this persistence and patience of. God, please give me patience, but hurry. And that's kind of what you're saying is you got to be persistent and eventually get there. And just listening to you, your whole message seems to be around it's the little things that make the big things happen.
Yeah.
Even your example at the end now with it being a mosaic and it's all these little things. And it's amazing when you look at it and you say, yes, I want to give to a whole lot and time. But if I got 100 people, I'm only going to give 1% to each and know where your focus is. And maybe that's where your crystal ball comes in. So I'm going to be one who is going to go back and listen to this again, because I think there are some amazing lessons in this, and I can't sum up all those lessons. But I am going to go back to the three E's. The one is education, and you've repeated that so often in so many different ways, even from the McDonald's story, and when you were summing up now about you've got to study, you've got to put your effort in, you've got to pick the five things that you're going to focus on. So it's the education on the focus, it's the exposure, and then you can't just do it by watching others. You've got to put your hand up, as you said, and you're going to say, I want to learn by giving, but I'm going to learn by doing. Greg, this has been an amazing insight into your world and just the world of running businesses. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
I'm David Zeidel, and this has been the Orchard Business Show.